We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome in to Candlestick Chronicles, a 49ers podcast on the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I am Kyle Madsen. I write about the 49ers over at NinersWire.com, part of the USA Today Sports Media Group. As always, joined by fashion baron Chris Biederman. And we've got some 49ers offseason news to get into. But before we do that, quick shout out to our friends at Lamb Chops. If you're watching on the video, you can see Chris's sick-ass Lamb Chops hoodie. It's the black on black with the black hoodie with the black Lamb Chops script. It is extremely fire. And Chris, I'm sure, very comfortable and high quality as well.
Extremely. It's my new favorite hoodie, along with the ash gray one, which is my initial favorite hoodie. They're basically the same thing. I liked and wore the ash gray one so much that, as you guys know, I've had to get another one. it seems like hoodie season, at least here in Sacramento, is hanging on for a little bit longer than yeah. It might usually.
Yeah, I'm here for it.
Which is of great benefit to me and my wardrobe, because I get to wear this awesome Lamb Chops hoodie and all the other Lamb Chops gear that keeps us nice and warm. Mm-hmm. So shout out to our homies at Lamb Chops.
We love Lamb Chops, and we know you will too. Go to sglambchops.com. Use promo code CANDLESTICK20 for 20% off your order today. That is sglambchops.com. Promo code CANDLESTICK20. Get 20% off your order. Also, join the herd. Follow them on Instagram at sglambchops. We also want to shout out Prize Picks. Prize Picks is back, and so are we. And daily fantasy sports does not end with football season, folks. You can get on Prize Picks. It is daily fantasy. You pick more or less. You get 2 to 6 players. You pick more or less on their stat projections, and then you watch the winnings roll in. Or if in Chris's case, you watch the losses pile up. It's fine. But now we're going to get a chance to get it all back, Chris. We're going to get a chance to do that with Prize Picks. And I'm fired up for you for basketball season and to get dialed in with Prize Picks with basketball and baseball, because daily fantasy never stops.
Gonna do a lot of more thans on Domantas Sabonis moving forward.
Smart.
We know the Kings aren't exactly the Detroit Pistons of the 1980s when it comes to defense and physicality, which means they're gonna have to score lots of points, which means lots of points and assists and rebounds for our guy Domas.
It's a great point by you.
Yeah, shout out to Prize Picks. we'll be on there regularly throughout basketball season, and definitely football season when that starts up again. I'm feeling good about next year. And
me too.
Mostly because it can't be as bad as last year was.
You're so due.
I'm due. Right. It's you know, easy logic. That's right. Not a fallacy at all.
PrizePicks.com/candlestick, promo code candlestick for a first deposit match up to $100. That is PrizePicks.com/candlestick, promo code candlestick for a first deposit match up to $100. That is Prize Picks. It is my favorite way to consume sports. I am so excited for our partnership with them, and I think that you'll enjoy doing that as well. Prize Picks, daily fantasy sports made easy. All right, let's talk 49ers.
Hey, this is George Kittle, and you're listening to Candlestick Chronicles.
Kittle in Denver territory! Kittle is gonna go! Touchdown!
Bosa has got him, and a sack him back inside the 30-yard line. Nick Bosa drops
Hey, so we're recording this Monday afternoon, and the legal tampering window has been open for about 8.5 hours. It just clocked out of work for the day. But before we get to the things that did and didn't happen for the 49ers on the first day of the legal negotiating window, Eric Armstead, it was reported Sunday night, got approached about a pay cut, and he chose to be released instead. That was first reported by Jordan Schultz of Bleacher Report. Matt Maiocco then had the report that Armstead had been approached about a pay cut. But then weirdly, the 49ers on Monday, again, according to Maiocco, didn't submit any transactions to the league, which leaves a question of what happened to the Armstead thing. And I'm starting to wonder if maybe that report of Armstead's impending release might have been a bit premature.
Yeah, so we see this, I think, time and again. You know, I think it's pretty rare, but occasionally you see something like, you know, this player's released and then a week later, oh, everyone changed their mind. Mm-hmm. And sometimes things can come out, and they come out with, you know, for good reason, right? Like, mm-hmm. there's basically a sign that's being made that says, you know, hey, our guy's available, give us a call.
sure,
you know, and then the market will respond, and maybe the asking price of a certain player won't be there, and then the player says, okay, fine, I will go to my initial team and discuss a pay cut and a reworked contract. That does happen now and again. I don't know what's happening in this case. I would think that given the 49ers relationship with Eric Armstead, that, you know, these two sides, I do think there's an element of the 49ers wanting to do right by Armstead. And if there's more money out there for him, I'm sure they would allow him to explore those opportunities. And it benefits the 49ers from the standpoint of, yeah, I mean, we can clear $17 million in cap space if you sign with another team and we give you a post June 1 designation, right? Mm-hmm. Armstead's initial cap number this year, $28 million, which is a lot for a guy who's going to be coming off surgery, who's missed significant time in each of the last two seasons now, who isn't, he's a good player, obviously, and obviously means a lot intangibly in the locker room from a leadership perspective. You know, I think the three straight, he's been the Walter Payton Man of the Year nominee for three straight years, does a ton in the Sacramento community. Obviously, I've written about that for the B at various points. And just like a very respected veteran, but at the same time, you look at defensive linemen who make $28 million a year. I don't know that you could put Eric Armstead in that tier at this point in his career, right?
You don't put him up there with Chris Jones and Aaron Donald?
No.
Okay.
And maybe I would if he wasn't dealing with injuries, right? Like,
sure.
He's a good player. And he's been at his best in the postseason, which I think is a testament to him for sure. Mm-hmm. But, you know, in terms of like, is this a good contract to be moving forward with? The answer is clearly no, right? I think the 49ers understand that. And I think Armstead realistically understands that too. That being said, I don't know that there's going to be a market for Eric Armstead that's going to pay him, you know, anything close to what he might be trying to make with a new team. And it might be that he tests the open market and teams say, well, you know, your best years are probably behind you, particularly given that you're going to have knee surgery now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, here's what we'd offer you. And he'd say, well, I can make that with the Niners in a situation that I'm comfortable with, that's close to home. And then ultimately he decides to come back. And instead of, you know, 1 year remaining on his contract, they convert it to a two-year deal that basically guarantees the same amount of money or a similar amount of money. Mm-hmm. And he comes back and ends up getting on the 10-year wall. Like, that wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's going to happen, but you know, you look at, like, you look at the deal the Seahawks just agreed to with Leonard Williams. It's 3 years averaging $21.5 million per Ian Rapoport. Armstead's not getting that deal.
No.
And he's probably not as good as Leonard Williams right now.
No.
So
no.
So, you know, I think the market will play itself out. And, you know, this is not meant in any way to, you know, criticize Armstead or anything. He's got to make the best decision he can for himself.
1,000%.
Obviously, he's got a ton of charitable stuff going on, which has required a lot of his time and money. And so it makes sense for him to try to maximize his earning potential over you know, these final few years of his deal. That being said, I don't know that there's going to be a huge market for Eric Armstead at $15, $20 million a year going forward. So it might be that the reason why there was no transaction on Monday after he was reportedly set to get released on Sunday night, that, you know, maybe he's able to take some, his camp is able to take some time negotiating with other teams. And then it turns out, all right, fine. I'll come back. We'll restructure this deal and we'll run it back. So we'll see.
Yeah. I don't know how that works. If he can talk contracts with other teams while he's still under contract with the 49ers.
I think you can be given permission by your team.
I see. Yeah. Let's just take his base salary, right? It's 17.4 this year. The defensive tackle contracts that average 17 million ish. It's Ed Oliver, Draymond Jones, Kenny Clark, Vita Vea, Jonathan Allen. Like, he's just not that caliber of player anymore. And then you go down and you look at, like, Dalvin Tomlinson with the Browns, really excellent player, making 14.25. This is, again, AAV, average annual value. DJ Reader, 13.25. Like, that, I can't imagine that the pay cut the Niners want him to take is going to put him at $8 million a year or something crazy like that. So I'm guessing that it wouldn't shock me if the Niners have a number in mind, and whether it's 13 a year or 14 or whatever it is, I can't imagine that's going to be out there. And I don't think this is a situation where Armstead wants to leave. I think it's just a matter of, if somebody comes to you, Chris, or listener, and says, hey, you've done a great job here at your job. We're going to give you a pay cut, but unless you can find a different job elsewhere. So go search for that job. You can still work here. Go search for that job. And if you find a higher paying job, then we'll let you go take it. Like, you're going to go try and find that higher paying job every single time.
Yeah. And
it's just
and
the right thing to do.
I know for a fact Armstead wants to be on the 10-year wall, right?
Yeah, like, that's a big deal.
The Niners haven't had, like, Joe Staley's kind of the last one, and I don't even know who would be before that, right? Patrick Willis never made it to the 10-year wall.
Yeah, remember, he mentioned that on this very podcast.
Yeah.
How that was, like, a goal of his was to get on the 10-year wall, but he just couldn't because of his feet. Frank Gore got on there?
Frank Gore got Joe 10? Staley. Gosh, Bryant Young.
Jimmy Ward came up short.
Jimmy Ward. Yeah.
Bryant Young for sure.
It's not a long list.
No, it's, and it's not hard. A long list. I bet the list of players who have been with their current team for 10 plus years is probably super short. Like, it's really hard to stick with an NFL team for 10 years. It's hard to be in the league for 10 years, period.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like Frank Gore, Joe Staley,
Kyle Nelson, right.
Steve Young,
obviously.
Brent Jones.
I'm trying to go through a decent
little quarterback.
Decent little player. Fred Warner has a real shot. Nick Bosa, we'll see. I'm just trying to go down their current roster, and it's just really hard to find players who are going to be in San Francisco for 10 years.
Yeah, totally. So, you know, we'll see about all that stuff. If the 49ers do end up moving on from Armstead, it will likely be, I would imagine, a post June 1 release, which means it would clear up almost 18 million in cap space, which, you know, is not insignificant, and would give them some freedom to be aggressive in free agency or have a little bit more flexibility when it came to Brandon Ayuk's new contract, which I think that's going to get done at some point this offseason. It might not happen till late July or, you know, August to start a training camp, but I am of the mind that Brandon Ayuk is going to be around and that they're going to get that contract done, particularly if they do have some of this cap space that they can work with.
Yeah.
While also shrinking his number from 2024 to, shrinking his cap number in 2024 from 14 on that fifth year option to, you know, probably 5 or 6 on a new extension too.
Yeah, there's just too much. The more I've thought about this, and you and I have talked about this on this podcast, it seems like a lot of the maneuvers they're making and a lot of what they're eyeing this offseason is next offseason when they might have to pay Brock Purdy upwards of $50 million. And I think if you're going to make that level of commitment, this is what we've said on the podcast before, but if you're going to make that level of commitment to a quarterback and you have a 25-year-old receiver who he has a great rapport with, 26, that he has a great rapport with already, and that receiver is already ascending in an offense where volume is very low for him, why would you not keep that player as a building block around your new quarterback?
We have a little bit of breaking news here.
Oh, drop it. Pause.
From Ian Rappaport at Rapsheet on X, formerly Twitter. More edge help, Cole.
Oh.
The hashtag 49ers are signing hashtag Panthers free agent defensive end. And I'm apologizing in advance regarding the pronunciation of this man's name. Yetur Gross-Matos to a 2-year deal worth $18 million.
Yeah, Penn State legend, former first round pick.
Yeah, and a super athletic. Super athletic.
Oh no, I'm sorry. Second round pick, 38th overall. Are you just neck deep in the spider graph right now?
No, but I can be. We're doing a little bit of on the fly podcasting here.
Yeah, we got this. Is great. I'm checking to see if I have any old takes about. Let me get the correct pronunciation here.
All right, we have the spider graph up. 6'5", 266. Long athlete, 34 7/8 inch arms, 92nd percentile. When looking at the broad jump, 86th percentile, 120 inches. You don't love the bench press numbers, 20 reps, 15th percentile, not ideal. But, you know, when you have longer arms, it is a little bit more difficult to get those reps up. Twitchy athlete.
Yeah, you love it. Yetur Gross-Matos.
Yetur.
I went to go see if I had any draft takes about Yetur Gross-Matos, and apparently I watched a Penn State game on November 23rd and said, based on what I've seen today, Yetur Gross-Matos is the second best defensive lineman in college football. So that's where that's at.
He just turned 26. Rookie year 2020, 2.5 sacks, 3.5 sacks, 2.5 sacks, and 4.5 sacks.
This dovetails nicely into the Leonard Floyd conversation, though.
Yes.
Who the 49ers signed to a 2-year deal worth up to $24 million, but that sounds like it's with incentives. It's more likely in the $20 million range. He gets $12 million guaranteed this year. And I put on our rundown here, this can't be it. They can't just roll with Leonard Floyd at the spot opposite Nick Bosa and call it good. And I think that Gross-Matos is a perfect addition, A, because he's listed at 6'5", 265, which means there's probably some inside-outside versatility there, a la Charles Omenihu. And you just mentioned all the measurables. Like, if you're going to bet on a rotational edge player, why not get one with a ton of upside? He's still just 26. He's been in a tough situation in Carolina. Maybe getting in With Chris Kocurek and this 49ers defensive line, maybe you squeeze some more of that untapped talent out of him, like they have with some of the other edge rushers we've seen them bring in.
Yeah, and look, like basically their entire second string defensive line is unrestricted free agent or headed to unrestricted free agency right now.
Right.
Right, including Cleveland Furl and Chase Young. So it looks like, at least on the surface, the 49ers are replacing those guys with Leonard Floyd and Yetur Gross-Matos.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to figure out the pronunciation before our next podcast. That's going to be a goal of mine before you get here. But I don't know. Like, I don't know how I feel about it just yet. I think Cleveland Furl was a good player. Obviously, he had the knee injury late in the season and couldn't be with the team in the playoffs. And Chase Young, this kind of would signal to me that Chase Young is gone, right?
Yeah, probably. It was probably, I think Gross-Matos fills the athletic upside defensive end role that Chase Young probably would have filled.
Yeah. But with Leonard Floyd, I think the thing that really stood out to me, he'd always kind of felt like somebody who's on the 49ers radar, right? Just kind of like a 49ers adjacent player, whether it was stylistically or the teams that he was on, right? Like being on the Rams for a while, you know, playing in Chicago when Vic Fangio was a defensive coordinator. And now it makes sense given that Brandon Staley, his former position coach, is now a defensive coach with the 49ers. Obviously, Nick Sorensen's a DC, but Staley's an associate head coach. And we still don't really know what that dynamic is going to look like. But I think Leonard Floyd, I mean, you look at it, he hasn't missed a game since 2017.
Yeah.
So he's played in every single game in the last six seasons, including the playoffs. He's been in a Super Bowl, won it with the Rams in 2021. Had a couple of sacks in those playoffs, including one in the Super Bowl against the Bengals. And I think he played 85% of the snaps in that game. Mm-hmm. But just, you know, you read about him. Obviously, over the last 4 years, he's had 39 and a half sacks. So he's almost at 10 sacks a year in the last four. Hasn't missed any time. And he's from... you know, without doing the deep film dive just yet, he seems like a guy who can be on the field in running downs too.
Yeah,
he's not
right.
A pass rushing specialist. He's an every down player, which I think is important because the 49ers have had, you know, they've had some issues. I mean, I thought Samson Ebukam was a really good edge setter. That was probably one of the more underrated parts about his game. Same with Charles Omenihu a couple years ago.
Yep.
I thought the 49ers lost that a little bit. And it was, you know, Chase Young didn't really prove to be a great edge setter. I think when he's fully engaged, he's a decent enough pass rusher, but the 49ers needed more of a every down type presence on the edge.
No doubt.
And I thought Cleveland Furl did a good job before he got hurt too, just in terms of like being a quality, not like somebody who's you're going to count on for 12 sacks a year.
Sure.
But I thought Furl did well in his role as sort of a rotational player and who can defend the run pretty well.
Yeah.
And
I
so,
agree.
You know, with Chase Young likely out the door now, bringing in Floyd and Furl potentially out the door now too, and bringing in Gross-Matos, I think it makes sense. We'll see if it works out. The 49ers love to make investments along their defensive line. And, you know, the other thing here too, what happens with Drake Jackson? Like, is Drake Jackson
sure?
Is he in the picture? Is he going to make the team? Is the new defensive staff, or at least the new leaders of the defense, are they going to count on him? And are the Niners going to be willing to put up with whatever developmental time it'll take? Obviously, was injured throughout 2023. It's a big question mark. It would seem adding two guys at these numbers specifically would indicate they don't have a ton of faith in Drake Jackson being part of the mix.
Yeah, man. I think regardless of how the rest of free agency and the draft go, I if they can get Cleveland Furl back on a cheap deal again, I think that rounds out your edge rush pretty or your, excuse me, your defensive ends, not necessarily your edge rush, but just kind of your edge depth really nicely. You can add another player in the draft. You have Robert Beal, who's a project second year player. I just don't know where Drake Jackson winds up fitting. And maybe he has a great camp. Maybe he comes back and he's just awesome and he takes this huge leap because you see all the tools, right? Like it's all there. And he hasn't really gotten a chance to stick at one position for multiple years. He hasn't gotten a chance to have the same body type for multiple years. He got hurt this season, but I mean, all the tools are there. The athleticism's there. So maybe a full off season a full training camp to work his way into the rotation. Maybe he surprises, but it feels like if they bring in another defensive end, whether through free agency or in the draft, especially if it's a day one or two pick, it feels like he's kind of the odd man out. But
yeah, we'll so Matt Maiocco, friend of the pod, reported that Drake Jackson initially called a knee injury. Jackson underwent quadriceps surgery,
mm-hmm.
which if it's what you remember what Weston Richburg went through when mm-hmm. he basically had to reattach the tendon, the tendon that connected his quad to his knee. Mm-hmm. That was a really, really tough surgery. And I think that ultimately cost him his career. When he decided to retire earlier than expected,
mm-hmm.
you know, I don't want to speculate about Drake Jackson's injury or his prognosis, but if it was tabbed a knee injury and he ended up requiring quadriceps surgery, you know, the fear would be, at least from where I sit, that it was a pretty substantial injury. And, you know, who knows if he's going to be able to recover to contribute this year, which makes sense given that the 49ers just brought in two $10 million a year type edge rushers.
Yeah. Yeah. I like the Leonard Floyd signing. I think that it's kind of interesting. He started all 17 games for the Bills last year, but, and this gets to the depth thing, but he only played like 54% of the snaps. So I think that's where ideally you'd have I'm like three down player opposite Nick Bosa, where you have Leonard Floyd as a rotational edge, and same thing with Gross Matos, and same thing with whether it's Furl or Drake Jackson or Robert Beal or whoever. It just doesn't, I think the group is better. They got better at defensive end today, but I still feel like this is a group primed to be sitting there in week eight and we're going, man, they need more. If they roll in with just this group, I think they're not done there yet. It's just too important of a spot.
We'll see. I think adding two of these guys and having multiple bodies, particularly if you think that you can develop Gross Matos into a more productive player than he's been
sure.
in his career to this point. I think that makes sense. Probably, you know, to get two bodies for, say, average $20 million
mm-hmm.
Makes more sense to me than, like, the Brian Burns thing never made any sense to me, right? Seemed like a road that the Niners were going to go down. The Danielle Hunter thing, I think, made sense, but I think we're going to look at him getting $25, $30 million a year. And it just, you know, as much as he would fit and you could potentially make the money work in a scenario like that, mm-hmm. I just don't really see the logic in having two $30 million a year defensive ends when you do have to pay Brandon Ayuk, when you are going to have to pay a quarterback at some point.
Yeah, that's just it. Is if it was Nick Bosa and they had no other big contracts, then okay, if you're trying to build out a defense, then that's great. Like in theory, you pair Brian Burns and Nick Bosa, you're going to have a really, really easy time affecting quarterbacks. But like you said, when you're piling on Fred Warner and George Kittle and Deebo Samuel and Brandon Ayuk and eventually Brock Purdy, it just never really made sense.
Yeah, and the Burns thing too, like, it's one thing to sign Danielle Hunter and give him a contract, $25, $30 million a year, right? Mm-hmm. Because you're not giving up draft capital.
Right.
To get Brian Burns would have required both draft capital and a new contract.
Mm-hmm.
And the 49ers just aren't in a position to do that. I mean, they could have if they really wanted to, but I think it would have prevented them from having the flexibility they would need going forward. And sure. Also, you know, the only times the 49ers have really done a trade and then sign, like trade for somebody and then sign them to a big contract, it's happened twice in my memory with, you know, obviously Jimmy Garoppolo, 2017, mm-hmm. they got him, played five games, and then they signed him to the massive contract. And with Dee Ford, who was tagged and traded by Kansas City, and as good as Dee Ford was when he was on the field, the 49ers have been paying dead money on that contract for the last few years, while obviously he's been retired. And I think in the aggregate, you could say that probably wasn't great. Like, you definitely see the logic behind it, but you could say it didn't really work out. And coming off the Trey Lance trade, when the 49ers invested three first round picks in a guy who is now the third stringer for the Dallas Cowboys,
mm-hmm.
they just weren't in a position to be dealing away draft capital and giving a massive contract to somebody like Brian Burns. That just never tried right. to me.
Yeah, I agree.
So now he's going to the New York Giants, obviously, and signed a $30 million a year contract. And it was funny because apparently the Rams offered two first round picks to Carolina for Brian Burns. Was it last year? 2 years ago? Yeah.
Last year.
And they decided not to take that deal. And he went today for a second and a fifth.
Well, when you're as competitive as the Panthers were over the last couple of years, it makes sense that you didn't want to deal Brian Burns. It just doesn't make any sense. This is not a Panthers podcast. I don't want to go deep on this, but it just doesn't. If you're going to do that, that's fine. But then you're committing to extending him. You're committing to pay whatever he demands. And that's a foundational building block for your defense. And now they just let him go for dog shit draft capital. It just doesn't make sense to me at all.
It's almost like David Tepper is not the best agent or best owner in the NFL.
Dude, you might be onto something.
Almost. Someone should look into that.
Hey, it's Kyle and Chris from Candlestick Chronicles, and we're here to talk to you about Prize Picks. We love Prize Picks. I don't think, Chris, I don't think anything has ever enhanced my sports watching experience more than Daily Fantasy. I've had such a blast with it.
Even more so than having a podcast.
Yeah, way more than having a podcast. Like, okay. This is work. Prize Picks is the very best thing, and I know we talked about it all during football season, but y'all, it's not just a football it's not just a football app, it's not just a football site. Prize Picks has anything that you can think of, you can build a daily fantasy sports entry in it. 2 to 6 players, regardless of the sport, you pick more or less on their stat projections, and then you watch the winnings roll in. Or in our case, you watch the losses pile up. But we're ready to bounce back this basketball season and baseball season or tennis or whatever you are into. You can build your entry again, 2 to 6 players, pick more or less on the stat projection, and it's my favorite thing. I had so much fun this year.
You don't have to be on an email chain with all of your friends.
It's a great point.
Hoping that they're going to be ready for the draft. You don't have to be scouring the waiver wire when your best running back and receiver gets injured on a Sunday.
Yeah.
You don't have to argue with your friends about doing a snake draft or an auction draft.
You're just giving me anxiety thinking about all these things.
It's a week. It's, you know, you can be on there. You can make your picks and you can get out. You know, you don't need to do hours and hours of research. Not that you can't. If you want to do all your research, totally. More power to you. But all of the dregs that come along with being in a normal fantasy operation, you don't have to worry about with Prize Picks. And that's what makes it fun.
And the thing that I love about Prize Picks specifically with daily fantasy is you're not playing against like sharp guys. You're not playing against thousands of other players. It is you and your entry. And that's it. And it's super easy to use. You go to prizepicks.com/candlestick. Use promo code candlestick for a first deposit match up to $100. That's right. We're giving that to you. prizepicks.com/candlestick. First deposit promo code candlestick for a first deposit match up to $100. Jump in there today. You're going to have a great time. And like I said, it's not just for football season. So get locked in. whatever sport you want, PrizePicks has got it at prizepicks.com/candlestick, and make sure to download the app as well. Super easy to use, super fun, and we think that you will love it just as much as we do. Again, that's prizepicks.com/candlestick, promo code candlestick for a first deposit match up to $100. That's PrizePicks, daily fantasy sports made easy. What's up, y'all? It's Kyle Madsen from Candlestick Chronicles, and I want to talk to you guys about AG1. So here's the deal. I was having a really hard time. I'd wake up at 3 a.m. for work, and every day it took me until, I mean, halfway through my radio show. It's like 10 a.m., 11 a.m. when I'm finally start to feel like, okay, I'm ready to start the day. I'm ready to feel normal. Not with AG1. I smash a scoop of AG1 before I leave the house in the morning. I am alert by almost right away, and it helps with my digestive health a lot. I'll tell you about that in a second. My overall start to my day, my foundation of my day has been genuinely better with AG1. So when I started drinking AG1 daily, you feel that difference in my daily health. I had more energy. That's the big thing for me, is like I said, those really slow starts in the morning, they went away. That the digestive problems have all but gone away, and it's been awesome. Thanks to AG1. And that's because AG1 is a foundational nutritional supplement that supports your body's universal needs like gut optimization, stress management, and immune support. Since 2010, AG1 has led the future of foundational nutrition, continuously refining their formula to create a smarter, better way to elevate your baseline health. Not only did I replace my multivitamin with AG1, but I love that every scoop also includes these prebiotics, dude. The prebiotics, probiotics, and digestive enzymes for gut support. That is not a thing that I had ever taken into account before, but man, has it been life-changing for me personally. It is a much better way to go through the day. I recommend AG1 to all my family and friends because of it. My buddy Randy hit me up very shortly after I started it. And I was like, dude, you got to try this. He did. And he even mentioned straight away the awareness in the mornings, that sluggishness and that focus early in the morning were better right after starting AG1. And probably the best part about it for me is I'm very routine based. And this is a super easy thing to throw into my daily routine. Sometimes I drink a scoop with just water. Tastes great. I'll throw it in with a smoothie. Doesn't affect the flavor of the smoothie. I'm a big fan of just the fact that AG1 is such an easy thing to put into my day. It's not an app that I have to use. I don't have to chart anything. I throw a scoop in some water. I throw a scoop in my smoothie, and I am good to go and reaping the benefits. If you want to take ownership of your health, it starts with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free 1-year supply of vitamin D3, K2, and 5 free AG1 travel packs when you first subscribe. Go to ag1.com/candlestick. That's drinkag1.com/candlestick. Check it out today. I cannot recommend it enough. Juwan Jennings, it was announced today by the 49ers that they have tendered a 1-year contract to him. It was a second round restricted free agent tender, which means that that Jennings can go out and search the open market. And if he, sorry, I'm getting my, trying to get my, I'm trying to get the free agent tenders. There it is. Tag and tender projections. There we go. It's a second round tender. So if Jennings goes and signs an offer sheet with another team and the 49ers opt not to match it, the team that signed him to the offer sheet owes the 49ers a second round pick. The second round restricted free agent tender is $4.89 million. So if Jennings plays on that 1-year tender, he would cost $4.89 million fully guaranteed this year. Then he'd be unrestricted next year. But he and the 49ers can still work toward a long-term contract extension. My guess is an extension gets done. What say you?
Yeah, it's tough because if you're the 49ers, you would definitely love to get Juwan Jennings for what, $15 million over 3 years?
Mm-hmm.
Say $20 million over 3 years, right?
Something 20 over three sounds right.
Yeah.
Sure.
But if you're Jennings, you say, all right, well, I'm basically your insurance policy, and I become way more valuable if and when you decide to trade Deebo Samuel after next offseason, to where I jump from a number three receiver to a number two receiver. And if I'm your number two receiver, I want to be making way more than $5, $6, $7 million a year. Right?
It's a good point.
So, you know, I think Jennings for sure is coming back this season. Like, there's no doubt in my mind about that.
I'd be shocked if a team was willing to give up a second round pick to acquire Juwan Jennings
in a year where the draft is loaded with receivers.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So Juwan Jennings is coming back for sure. The bigger question is, you know, I'm going to say that I don't think they do come to an agreement on a long-term deal. And I think it will allow Jennings to continue to build on his value and potentially test unrestricted free agency. You remember, like, NFL players, their whole thing, not their whole thing, like, they want to win, obviously. Mm-hmm. But, like, a career goal for the vast majority of NFL players is to be productive and then hit unrestricted free agency. Mm-hmm. You know, that's like, you talk to guys, that's like that is their earning power. Like, they will never sign a bigger contract than the first time they hit unrestricted free agency in the prime of their careers. So
yeah,
while it absolutely makes sense for the 49ers to try to get a deal done with Jennings, what I think is probably likely is that, and that's redundant, probably likely, what I think is likely is that Jennings would look at it and say, why would I want to tie myself down to a 3-year, $18 million contract for you guys, which works for you guys as a number three receiver, when it could be that I'm the number two receiver next year and I would be worth maybe double that. So why, you know, I'll play out this season, be productive again. And, you know, I was your leading receiver in the Super Bowl and I was a super important player in the Super Bowl. And then I could hit unrestricted free agency and potentially be somebody's number two receiver next year if you guys don't want to pay me as a number two. So okay, I don't think the Niners and Jennings are gonna. I mean, I'm not ruling it out. I would just say I think what makes sense for the 49ers is to offer him third receiver money while Jennings could be productive enough to warrant number two receiver money if he hits unrestricted free agency next year.
If you're the 49ers, are you giving him 3 and 24? With 14 guaranteed. Yeah. That's what Zay Jones got from the Jags. And then you have Adam Thielen making 8.3, Russell Gage 8.5, Juju Smith-Schuster 8.5. Robert Woods got 7.6 from the Texans. Like, I think that's a deal the 49ers could be really comfortable with. And I think if you're Juwan Jennings, you'd be really comfortable at that spot as well. Because you said, I mean, you mentioned a really productive year. He had 19 catches for 265 yards and a touchdown. And teams aren't going to pay a good blocking receiver who averages 320 yards and a couple of touchdowns a year $15 million. And I don't foresee a scenario where Jennings is coming out and having this breakout year where he has 900 yards and 6 touchdowns and gets this huge payday in free agency. I think the risk reward of not signing now, let's call it 3 and 24. If that's what the Niners offer, I don't know that, but let's just cut, for sake of argument here. If they offer him 3 and 24, the risk reward of, no, I'm going to bet on myself and try and make more than 8, is like, you're just as likely to get hurt and diminish your value, you know? So I don't.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I don't know. And I absolutely think the 49ers would love, like, I think the 49ers would offer him that type of contract. There's no doubt that the 49ers would love to sign him to that type of deal because it would be of good value. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying, if you're Jennings and you look at the cap exploding throughout the league and you look at Kyle Shanahan and assistants running offenses all throughout the league, despite whatever his numbers might be, it wouldn't be a super difficult sell for, say, Kubiak running the Saints offense in New Orleans.
Bobby Slowick.
Bobby Slowick, somebody like that. Saying, we love this guy, maybe we give him 10 or 12 million a year. I know it sounds like a lot, but the cap's gone up $50 million the last 2 years, right?
Sure.
So, like, so a lot of these deals are going to just get bigger. Like, it's basically the cap going up is basically inflation, right? It's not that more guys are going to get paid necessarily. It's just that these bigger contracts are just going to get bigger and bigger.
Sure.
So I could see
Gabe Davis just got 13 a year from the Jags.
Yeah.
And his 4 years, he's gone 7 touchdowns, 6, 7, and 7. And he's been up near or above 600 yards every single season.
Yeah. Like that's all I'm saying. Like, if I'm Juwan's representation, I'm like, you know, I would certainly look at a contract with the 49ers, and ultimately it would be up to Jennings to be like, you know, do you want to take an $18 million contract now, or do you want to see if you can get 30 next offseason?
Sure.
Right? Like, not 30 a year, but like 30 in guarantees or something.
Sure.
Right? Like, who knows? Deebo Samuel fractures his shoulder. Jennings starts 13 games, 7 touchdowns, 600 yards, blocks his face off, has another big playoff moment.
Sure.
Right? Like, that's a guy who could do work on the free agent market. That's all I'm saying.
No, that's a good point. Gosh, I forgot that Deebo Samuel is the 7th highest paid wide receiver. Oof.
Yeah.
That's a lot. Couple of lesser things that happened on Monday. Brandon Allen is back at quarterback. That can't be at QB, right? There's just no way they go into Brandon Allen as QB2.
Well, I could see them drafting somebody. Not early.
Yeah, that's what's the earliest, because I'm with you. Maybe they really love Brandon Allen and they think he is QB2 and the whole quarterback injury thing is now a thing of the past, and they're super confident that they can just do a normal backup situation where the backup just doesn't really play. I'm with you on drafting a quarterback. What's the earliest that they could draft a quarterback for you?
I wouldn't draft a quarterback earlier than day 3. So I guess, you know, I haven't looked at the draft class all that closely just yet, but like, if it's a day 3 pick, even if it's a 4th rounder, like if you like a guy, take him.
Sure.
You know, like there have been plenty of quarterbacks drafted in the 4th round who end up being career backups. And maybe that's somebody that, you know, CJ Beathard, for example. Right.
Yeah. Third round pick.
Compensatory 3rd round pick, basically.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Semantics.
No, I was more agreeing with you than anything.
If it was a 4th round pick in day 3, I think I would be fine with it. You know, like Kyle Shanahan and Brian Greasy love a dude. I'm not going to tell them that they, you know, they can't draft him just because you have Brock Purdy. I don't think, like, I think everybody with the 49ers is mature enough to be like, yeah, we drafted a guy earlier than we drafted Brock Purdy, but Brock's clearly our guy. Like, this isn't a thing.
In fairness, everybody they draft is drafted earlier than Brock Purdy. So,
right, for sure. But like, you know, there, I know there's this idea that like, well, you can't draft anybody earlier than the 7th round because it would undermine Brock Purdy.
That's silly.
It's like, yeah, it's silly. Like we're all kind of beyond that at this point.
I wouldn't use a
pick on one of the first 2 days of the draft, but you know, if they found someone they liked in the 4th round, I'd be fine with it.
I think if they went late 3rd round pick with it, if it was a quarterback that they were just super high on, then I don't think I would hate it. But yeah, day 3 feels right. Just a developmental quarterback. He can be QB3 or I would, you know, maybe be QB3 unless he does a Brock Purdy and wins the QB2 job.
I mean, if you could have, ideally, like Brandon Allen signed a 1-year deal, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think in an ideal world, you could have a capable backup quarterback on a rookie contract.
Yeah.
Rather than, you know, paying Sam Darnold $5 million, right? Rather than pay Sam Darnold Robbie Gould money to be your backup quarterback.
Yeah.
Right. I think that would be the ideal world. So if you are drafting a quarterback in the 4th or 5th round, you're drafting him hoping he could develop into your backup. So next year, you don't have to pay a backup.
Right. Yeah. And then you keep your QB room as cheap as possible, even after paying Brock.
Yeah.
That makes sense to me. And if things go sideways with Brock Purdy, you have a draft pick that you like in the building already.
Yeah.
In the disaster event. Charlie Werner, no longer a 49er. Chris, your thoughts?
Like, I think the Super Bowl hangover thing is a real... is a real thing. Like, we saw how, you know, the 2020 season after the 49ers went to the Super Bowl and lost to the Chiefs was just a complete disaster. you're going to look back, if 2024 is a complete disaster, you're going to look at Charlie Warner leaving as the first domino.
Yeah, no doubt.
It's going to be, oh, that was ominous. This is, you know, how are we possibly going to replace his blocking, his special mm-hmm. teams prowess, his presence in the locker room?
Yeah, and I think the underrated thing here, or the thing that hasn't gotten bandied about quite enough, is that the Falcons went and they go make the big swing at quarterback, right? They go get Kirk Cousins. And it's pretty clear that Cousins immediately started, you know, swinging his newfound power around and said, get me some weapons. And the Falcons said, we've got just the guy.
Well, speaking
of, we know who we were targeting. But 3 years, $12 million. Good for Charlie Warner, dude.
Oh, yeah. But if I can continue with a bit here.
Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
Speaking of weapons, you remember how when George Kittle came on the pod and we asked him, you know, we're doing some really serious journalism, and we asked him which teammate he would want to survive a zombie apocalypse with.
Yeah.
He said Charlie Warner.
He did.
So I don't know exactly what he was alluding to, but I thought that was an appropriate segue when you mentioned, you know, Kirk Cousins wanting weapons.
Yeah, maybe like a personal bodyguard kind of deal.
Sure. Yeah. Somebody not afraid to use the tools at his disposal.
Charlie Warner, of course, a Georgia native. So he's familiar with the landscape in case things go haywire.
Went to the University of Georgia.
He did.
Unfortunately, I remember it being mentioned that when the 49ers drafted Charlie Warner, he was a sixth round pick?
Yes.
That this would be a Rob Gronkowski, Aaron Hernandez type duo.
Oh, yeah, a little duo. Yeah. Combination of those two.
Didn't quite work out that way.
It's a shame that the 49ers didn't win the Super Bowl, despite on their roster having a cross between Drew Brees and Lamar Jackson and Rob Gronkowski and Aaron Hernandez. It's kind of nuts.
Someone's got to hold them accountable.
Feet fire now. No, good for Charlie Warner, though, man. I was so sure that when I was going through free agency stuff at Niners Wire, it's like, dude, Charlie Warner's back. He's back on like 2 years and $6 million and $3.5 million guaranteed or whatever. And this is just his lot in life to be George Kittle's backup and / third tight end if the Niners find a better one. And no, he gets $4 million a year from his hometown team and gets to join an up and coming Falcons club. Good for him. Shout out to Charlie Warner.
He played a lot. Like, for a guy who never caught the ball, he played a lot.
For a guy who never played, he played a lot.
No,
dude, he had 11 catches for 120 yards in 4 years. George Kittle has like multiple games where he has more production than that.
Yeah, I mean, and he played 20% of the snaps in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, 29% I think for the year. Now, it's a key piece, and this opens just another, I mean, this is just a whole other conversation. I was pretty deep in the weeds, but I figure most people listening to a 49ers podcast in March are probably cool to go down here. Ross Dwelly, also a free agent, which means the 49ers have George Kittle. They have Cameron Latu, who spent a third-round pick last year, spent the entire season on IR. And Braden Willis, a seventh-round pick from last year, who played very sparingly on offense. So I imagine the Niners are going to go get another veteran tight end. I think Will Disley got released by the Seahawks. Good blocking tight end, a little bit of a receiving threat, certainly more than Charlie Warner was.
I believe he signed somewhere. Let me.
Oh, did he? Oh, you know what? I think he did. I think
Chargers.
Right. Yes.
Yes, he signed with the Chargers.
No, you're right.
Three-year deal.
I knew that. Just that type of player is what I meant.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So I imagine they'll go get some kind of veteran tight end and see what they've got with their two young guys. But that's going to be something that, if you're deep in the weeds on the Niners, their backup tight end situation is rough right now.
So, given, switching gears a little bit,
please,
you got to spin it forward to the draft.
Nice job.
Given the 49ers have added two edge rushers today, Mm-hmm. Likely meaning the end of Cleveland Furl and Chase Young.
Maybe.
With San Francisco. I think likely is fair. Do you think this changes what they do early in the draft?
No. Early in the draft, like first 2 days?
Yeah.
Nah. Because this is Leonard Floyd is on a 2-year deal and he's 31 or 32.
31.
Gross Matos hasn't done enough as an NFL player to warrant, like, oh yeah, hey, here's a guy we can bank on for the next 2 years. I think that if you're going to really invest at defensive end, you need to actually do it. Unless they're super high on Robert Beal or are super bullish on Drake Jackson still. But I've been of the mind now, according to people smarter than me who follow the draft closer than I do, it's not a great edge class. But if you find a high upside player you like on day two, then I think you go for it. If not, then you'd get a Robert Beal type later in the draft and see if you can mold them. But I still think it's offensive line. Probably need some cornerback help. Got to figure out what they're doing at safety.
I think it's defensive tackle.
Defensive tackle. Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah, if one of the top, I've been doing a lot of offensive line stuff in mock drafts, but if one of Byron Murphy from Texas, I believe his name is Jerjon Newton from Illinois, are the two big defensive tackle prospects. If one of those guys falls, then maybe the Niners do it and pull the trigger for value or whatever over positional need. But I still think it's, even with the Colton McKivitz signing a 1-year extension, I still think you have to, it's too important of a position to just go, yeah, maybe it's Colton McKivitz. I think
we haven't talked about McKivitz.
We have not.
It was a 1-year, $7 million extension.
65% fully guaranteed. That's how his agency
worded it. The 49ers gave their starting right tackle guard money.
Hmm. Although apparently guard money is $20 million a year now. So
yeah, I mean, that's true too. It raised my eyebrows from the standpoint of there aren't too many. I mean, it seems like to me them paying him guard money was pretty deliberate. Like terms of like 31 does feel pretty logical to take a right tackle.
Yeah, no doubt. And based on the prospects I've seen fall to the 49ers at 31, it's a lot of could play guard, could play tackle type of prospects. And so I think you extend Colton McKivitz and best case for him is he holds down the right tackle spot and he makes a leap and the 49ers have a right tackle. But worst case, if you wind up drafting a right tackle who's better than McKivitz and McKivitz doesn't win the right guard job and now he's your backup swing tackle, Swiss Army knife offensive lineman, I feel way better about him in that spot than I do as a starting right tackle. So maybe it's just acquiring capable offensive linemen. Like you re-sign John Feliciano, you have Spencer Burford, you have Colton McKivitz, you draft a player in the first round who can play tackle or guard, and then you just kind of let them duke it out and you see who's best at what position.
I think that's kind of
where they're leaning.
I think so. My feeling is because the 49ers have a bunch of compensatory picks again, right? And mm-hmm. they have their picks in rounds 1 through 3. And then they have three picks in round 4, a pick in round 5, 2 in round 6, and 2 in round 7. I think the 49ers look at comp picks as sort of extra currency for trades.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it would make a lot of sense for them to identify somebody they like maybe middle of the first round or in the 20s.
Mm.
And then try to jump up and get a tackle that they think could, you know, play right tackle sooner rather than later, and then switch over to replace Trent Williams whenever he retires in the next few years.
Interesting. Yeah, I could definitely see that for sure. If that trade is available to them, no doubt.
Yeah.
Would you prioritize that so highly that if, let's say there's a tackle prospect who falls to, we'll just say 22. So they got to jump up 9 spots. And they are just, they love him. But that team that they're trading with, whoever it is, I don't know who's picking at that spot. But whoever's picking 22nd says need 31 and your second this year.
Philadelphia is at 22.
So if Philly wants a one and your second this year, where you're picking 22nd and then not picking again until the late third round, is that something you're good with?
I might do next year's second.
Hmm.
I don't know.
Here's my thought on it. If it's a player that they know, and obviously you don't know, but that they, in the future, we get to September and it's like, man, that player they traded up for is a monster at right tackle. He's going to start 17 games this year and they are primed for Trent Williams' retirement. He's going to slide over to that left tackle spot and be there for a decade. Then I think you 100% do whatever realistic thing you can to get up and get that player.
And it would be like, at that point, you are betting on the talent, right? Like the mm-hmm. physical skill set, mm-hmm. but you're betting on the person, the work ethic, all the character stuff, everything that makes a gold helmet Niner or mm-hmm. a gold helmet prospect. And that's all of like, you know, like what I'll always go back, like George Kittle and Fred Warner, like gold helmet type prospects who like, well, we're not sure that, you know, obviously those guys weren't first round picks from a talent perspective, but like you're betting on the human being, their mm-hmm. drive, their work ethic, their football character, all of that stuff to develop into somebody that you can rely on. Because being reliable is far more than just being talented.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of like mental stuff, mental strength, football character, all the, you know, cliche mm-hmm. intangible things that make elite pro. So like when the 49ers, if they do identify a prospect like that, that they trade up, you know, it's like, okay, they love this dude.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like they're mm-hmm. not, this is not like a Javon Kinlaw. Like there are a lot of questions, but we like the talent. Like this has got to be
position
like,
need. Yeah.
Yeah. This has got to be something where like, we are convinced that this dude is going to be a team captain for us and like not only be a productive player, but somebody that we can rely on and be mm-hmm. like a leader, like a, you know, that type of dude. Like that's what this prospect has to be. It can't be like, yeah, he wasn't as productive in school, but you know, he's 6'7" and he has 40 inch arms and man, we just a ball of clay. Like it can't be that guy.
Yeah, no doubt. I don't think. No doubt. Yeah. You can't afford to, hey, that draft pick showed up 30 pounds overweight to camp. Now he's not going to play this year because he's got to get in shape to play in Shanahan's offense.
Right.
I can't fly.
Yeah. Ends up being a guard because he's gained too much weight and can't move.
Hey, can we clap it out one time for Kirk Cousins, by the way, no longer being in our lives? This is big time. We can dead the Kirk Cousins 49ers. Stuff. This is just a great day for us. I'm really, I mean, really excited.
It's a tradable contract. You're so mad. No, I mean, Kirk Cousins is going to go down as one of just the all-time bag of getters in human history.
Oh, he's an icon. An absolute baggage claim icon. And I'm really, really proud of him for joining the Falcons so we can shut the hell up about Kirk Cousins on the 49ers.
What was it? 4-5 years, 180?
Four for 180 with 100 guaranteed. For a 36-year-old coming off an Achilles tear.
Jeez.
But they didn't want to fuck around with Lamar Jackson last year. Sure, man.
I mean, maybe they didn't, but they also, like, is Baltimore really going to trade Lamar Jackson in that moment?
Last year?
Yeah. Were they going to trade him?
I mean, maybe. That's not the point, though.
Okay.
The point is that the Falcons didn't even feign interest.
Like, nah. Oh, right. Yeah, they, like, released a statement saying that they were interested.
Yeah. That's just weird. Not something we want to do right now, and he's too injury-prone, and, like, okay.
Right.
And he goes and wins an MVP, and they pay 36-year-old Kirk Cousins coming off an Achilles tear. Someone get Jonathan out of here, please. Not helping.
That was the joke I was making. Jonathan in the YouTube chat says tradable contract 2025 to Niners. Yeah, that was the joke.
The Falcons are gonna go 9-8 and be a first round exit in the playoffs, and Brock Purdy is going to struggle, and we're going to be sitting here next offseason like, oh, well, do you trade a first for Kirk?
Would you rather give Brock Purdy $50 million a year or trade your third round pick to alleviate the Falcons of Kirk Cousins?
I would rather pay Brock Purdy 100% of the salary cap than have to deal with like, oh, it's been a long time and been a long time coming. Kirk Cousins finally a 49er. You know, the Niners didn't even look at quarterbacks in the 2017 draft because they were planning to sign Kirk Cousins the next offseason.
Oh, man. NinersWire.com, part of the USA Today Sports Media Group.
Thank you.
Used to be all over Kirk Cousins rumors back in 2017.
You rode the Kirk Cousins rumors to so many monthly bonuses. Five reasons Kirk Cousins joining the 49ers is a good idea.
And I was not wrong. That was well before all of the, Kyle Shanahan saying publicly that their plan was to sign Kirk Cousins. May or may not have been in tune with what was going on there. Just saying.
Tapped in. Had a babe. You have anything else for us? Russell Wilson's joining the Steelers. That's a notable thing that happened.
What a disaster that's going to be. Holy
not a
cast
off, though.
Holy cow. That is going to be horrendous.
It's so funny that the Steelers are presenting this as a quarterback competition.
I would love, of all the meetings I could be a fly on the wall on this offseason, it's the first one where Russell Wilson sits in Mike Tomlin's office. And the discussion about what the season is going to be like happens. Because in Mike Tomlin's mind, I have a ton of respect for Mike Tomlin. In Mike Tomlin's mind, I'm sure he's looking at it like, yeah, man, you're going to have to earn your starting job. And Russ,
I have no doubt that's what's in his mind for sure.
And I wonder how how willing Russ is going to be to listen to that conversation.
Bro, you know what? You know what I'm here for? Kenny Pickett getting the first snap of the ones at training camp.
Hmm.
I'm so here for everything that comes with that. Russell Wilson just vibing with the twos for a week.
Until it becomes
very clear that Kenny Pickett stinks and Russell Wilson, even in this stage of his career, is way better.
I get the bet. It's like they're paying $1.2 million or whatever to have Russell Wilson be in their quarterback room.
Mm-hmm.
I get the bet. It's of little risk.
No doubt. No doubt.
I do not think it's going to work.
I could not agree more with you. I heard somebody the other day breaking it down. Basically, Russell Wilson is the exact same quarterback he was in Seattle. He's just less athletic, so he can't create as much, and he still won't throw it over the middle. Oh, okay. Cool.
And just like the personality of Pittsburgh, the city, and Steelers fans, I just could not see a more diametrically opposite mindset than what Russell Wilson has had in throughout his career.
And yeah. Like, yeah.
Just it's a chef's kiss thing. It's one of those things that happens in sports. You're like, this is going to be a disaster and I can't wait.
Right. Yeah. It's going to be fun to follow. I can't wait.
Yeah.
All right. I think that's all I've got.
Charlie Warner.
See you at the jersey retirement.
Yeah.
All right. 89. Very good. That number 89. Never be worn again.
Until they draft a tight end in the fourth.
I was going to say, until this UDFA from Northern Kentucky rocks it.
Is that a school?
Yeah, like UNK, the Hilltoppers. Come on, man.
Oh, the Hilltoppers. Wow, look at you. Yeah.
Come on. I pick them every year in March Madness, and they never win.
Okay, fair.
All right. Thanks everybody for watching. Thank you everybody for listening. If you are not already subscribed to our YouTube channel, please do so. youtube.com/@Candlestick Chronicles Podcast, or you can just search Candlestick Chronicles right there. Please subscribe, hit the little thumbs up button on the videos you watch. We would appreciate that immensely. Everybody in here right now, please go ahead and hit that thumbs up. Thank you so much for doing so in advance. And if you don't already subscribe to the pod, please do so wherever you get your podcasts. And when you do subscribe, please also rate and review. We're hanging out with you through the whole offseason. So if you've got friends who are Niner fans who are like, I don't want to go back to football yet, just tell them, hey, you know what? We're not talking X's and O's. We're just getting through the offseason one day at a time. It's next football season's coming, no matter what. So we're getting you ready for it. And we appreciate everybody for watching and listening along. We will talk to you next time.
Subscribe, rate, and review, and we will have a full breakdown on which college has a team nicknamed the Hilltoppers in our next episode.
Oh, Western Kentucky. That's right. No, Rob's right. It is Western Kentucky.
You just ruined the tease.
That's my bad. Northern Kentucky is obviously the Norsemen.
Oh, sure. Oh,
what an idiot. I'm so dumb. Goodbye, everybody.
Subscribe, rate, and review. We'll see you guys later this week.
The headlines remind us daily, the world is a dangerous place. The elites in charge say everything's fine, stop noticing. But you know better. And your gut knows that time is short to prepare for a world that is 4 missed meals away from chaos. My Patriot Supply has helped over 3 million families become more self-reliant and is the company Americans trust to prepare. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and secure their best-selling 3-month emergency food kits. Each contain delicious breakfasts, lunches, and dinners, averaging over 2,000 calories per day. Secure at least one food kit for each family member. For a limited time, save $200, plus get free shipping on all their Ready Hour 3-month emergency food kits. You're not ready if it's not Ready Hour foods. My Patriot Supply also has solar power generators, water filtration units, biomass stoves, heirloom seeds, and critical survival gear. Shop MyPatriotSupply.com today. MyPatriotSupply.com.